Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Taste the Mediterranean through March 19th at Whole Foods Market. Save on animal welfare certified bone-in beef short ribs, sustainable wild-caught sockeye salmon, and more. Find sales on Parmigiano-Reggiano, charcuterie and ground lamb. Grab an olive boule bread from the bakery. Plus, wines from the Mediterranean start at just $8.99. Taste the Mediterranean now at Whole Foods Market. Must be 21 plus. Please drink responsibly.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Podcast time. Today, Michael Julian, aka MJ. I was introduced to MJ during lockdown on social media through my management, and we've got talking and we've met a couple of times, a bunch of times, and kind of built up a really nice relationship. And my MJ's history goes back a long way with dance music. He was pretty much one of the main guys behind the Electric Zoo in New York. He is pretty much a marketing mastermind genius. He's also runs all of Elrose in the whole of the United States and North America, and he's also started a community based kind of project called Grey Area. His insight to the industry is amazing. He's a lovely guy, and I just absolutely love this conversation. So I'll stop talking and let's get going. Without further ado, MJ, and we are live, man. How's it going?
Good, man.
Good to see you. How's life?
Life is good. You know, we are facing this time where no one knows what tomorrow brings. So as much as uncertainty excites me, I'm a little bit tired of being excited all the time.
Yeah, I can relate to that. It's like one day everything's happening, the next day nothing's happening, and then the next day everything's happening, the next day we don't know what's happening. It's kind of strange, right? We've not lived a life like this for a long time.
Yeah. And from where I am, you know, I've seen trends before when things happen in Europe. America was kind of behind, and now what's happening in Europe is really, it depends on the country, but I don't actually know what's going to happen in America, you know, right now with everything that's going on. I'm just so happy to see people are out and the festivals are taking place, and it doesn't seem like there is any bad news in terms of the events being super spreading or anything like that. You probably have noticed in the past, literally a week, massive amount of venues and festivals have changed their guidance on who can enter, like major change. And so it went from, at least where I am, it went from, hey, you can separate the people if they're vaccinated versus vaccinated, to let everyone in if you're under a certain amount of people, to now you have to be vaccinated or tested. I think that's what is in New York and a lot of other cities anyways. And, you know,
what's your thoughts on that whole kind of thing?
Well, listen, I stayed away from politics my whole life. Yeah. And then I kind of got into it during the election. It was, you know, very heated. Honestly, I lost a lot of people who were, I thought, my friends, is just because there were some things that were beyond anything I can accept, you know, from other people. It was just inhuman, which is sad. But when it comes to vaccines, I'll be the first to admit, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, right? I was going to be one of those who waited a long time until I see how others are doing before I commit to putting something in my body, especially, you know, my son has a condition that, you know, it made us research some things through some years in the past 4, 5, 6 years. And I don't really trust vaccines in general because I don't know what's in there. With that said, vaccines have saved the planet from pandemics before. And obviously there are vaccines that make people healthy. So my mindset was like, look, I'm going to stay away from it until I got a call from a friend in March who said, listen, someone is not going to show up to the appointment today. They have their vaccines. You're not going to be taking anyone. So you want to go and do it? And just like that, in a matter of 2 minutes, I just decided I'm just going to go and do it. And I went and I got it. So my point of view is people should get vaccinated because they can save lives. They can save their life. They can save someone else's life if they're the one that are carrying it. Yeah. But, you know, I don't judge people based on their preferences. So I don't know. It's a tough topic.
What's your thoughts on, because if anyone doesn't know, you are like a huge member of the team at Electric Zoo. You run pretty much all of the Elro parties in America. You deal with a lot of people on, you entertain a lot of people. You're the kind of brains behind entertaining a lot of people and getting a lot of people put together. What's your thoughts on the whole, you must be vaccinated to enter a venue?
You know, and that's what I was getting to before. I don't feel like, on one side, I don't feel it's right to tell people that they must put something in their body. But if not vaccinating is the reason why the virus keeps living, then of course I can't, you know, but go vaccinate, right? Yeah. And because I don't know the facts, it's just such a delicate subject for me because I don't know the facts. I don't have an opinion formed. You know, I do want people to get vaccinated for their own good. I mean, we've lost people. We know people that were young, our age, people who grew up with that just died. And you know what? Here's what I'm going to tell you. None of them, first of all, thought that they were in real danger. And none of them knew that they were talking to someone who had a virus when they got it, right? It's not like they... people cough, and so you know not to come close. So you know, it's a very delicate subject for me. I want everyone to be healthy. Yeah. I understand people that will come in and say that for health reasons they cannot get vaccinated. But if they're healthy, and at this point, you know, how many people around the world got vaccinated? You know, I think if this keeps virus away, then we should support that moment.
Yeah. Totally, man. Totally. That was a fucking depressing start to this podcast.
Jesus, I just, you know, it gets political. This is the problem, right?
This is, and I think this is more in America that it gets more political over anything else. And I don't give a shit about politics, if I'm honest with you. It doesn't really, I think for me as an artist and somebody that's kind of in the public eye quite a lot, I have my opinions, but I don't talk about those opinions to anyone at all. Even some of my friends I don't talk to, because I don't want to create a divide in communities. And I think the one thing that we all have in this music industry is a community that we all need to stick together and all need to give people a way to actually escape reality. And at this moment in time, reality is pretty fucking depressing in the grand scheme of things.
You're absolutely right. And that's exactly what I always say. Like, we unite people on the dance floor.
Yeah.
So that we don't have, you know, it doesn't matter your race, your age, nothing matters, right? We all come together. This is the beautiful thing about what we do. Partially why I love it. I could never see that people will not dance together because of their political views. So I don't go and look there. But at the same time, quietly me, I wonder sometimes when the events go by, are they letting the events go because they want to encourage people to get vaccinated because they would allow vaccinated people in and not allow unvaccinated in? Is that a way to get people vaccinated? Is that a political move, or is this really coming from the doctors and the health experts that are saying this has to be done? And I don't have the answer.
Yeah, I watched a really interesting thing on Instagram today, and it was I don't really want to say it, but it was this lady that was a biochemist. She has a PhD in biology and vaccines and stuff like that. And it was an eye-opener, put it that way. It was a huge eye-opener. And then for me, it was like, wow, this is kind of, we're not being told the truth from the people that are leading. Are you still there?
I see you.
Oh, I lost you, dude.
Can you see me?
Yeah, they cut out for a little bit. It was just, I'll send it to you after this, because it was kind of an eye-opener, and I was like, okay, like, I don't know, I think the thing that I really struggle with at this moment in time is that we live in a free society, right? We're supposed to live in a free world, and with that free world, we're allowed choice. Like, I'm fully vaccinated. It's not even about that, but I think it's, where does it go from there on? And I think that's the thing, is I'm all for people being fit and healthy, but I'd rather people be fit and healthy than worry about being vaccinated. Like, let's talk about actually being fit and healthy as a nation. Let's talk about how do we get better as human beings? How do we have better mental health? How do we have better physical health, our diets, everything? Like, how that's not being talked about at all. And I think
exactly the shit that goes into food, right?
Exactly,
the amounts of sugar and chemicals that's everywhere, the fact that in this country at least so many people are overweight and have diabetes just because they buy food. And they, you know, and this is the thing, people go and they buy food that are pre-packaged, pre-frozen, they put it in the microwave, they're eating chemicals, yet they come in and have a propaganda social media campaign that the government is injecting them with some crap. I mean, like, right? I have to make sure for myself, when I speak to people, that they have the right mindset of why they are not vaccinating and why they're against mandatory vaccinations. Like, I have to understand that they have real reasons behind it, and that it's not just because literally they're bored. You know, because we are not during World War II. We have food, we have roof over our heads, like, we have everything. And you know, sometimes people just need something to argue or make a debate on. And you know, when everything else is pretty good, well, here you go and argue with vaccines, or whether they're not good for you, or whether they're good for you. My stand is, I'd like for this virus to go away. I think if it goes away, we win. And if it doesn't go away, we lose. So if getting vaccinated helps it go away, then yeah, by all means, I'm going to support that. But I cannot tell any human who feels that they're in danger from getting vaccinated that they have to do it. I don't think that anybody can or should.
Totally, man. Totally. I want to talk about the first party you ever threw and you were ever part of kind of being involved in. Because I'm really interested in the history of what you've done over the years. And
you know, I was always a part of a team, always, for different reasons. First of all, I'm myself like an ADHD brain. I can't really do one thing and be satisfied. I have to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
Being a part of partnership is good, because then you have a lot of good people and everyone's working together. So in my career, right, in producing live events, I've always been a part of a big crew. So it was never all on my shoulders, I'll be the first to admit. But partially, I think that's why it lasted so long and I stayed.
Mm.
If it was all on my shoulders with the amount of stress and losing money all myself, I don't know if I would have stayed. But the very first party, we threw it at a Jewish catering hall. I think I was a senior in high school. I definitely was not an electronic music party, but it was just, you know, in the neighborhood. And we had like 300-400 people show up. I wasn't a club kid at all. I like good food, gambling, you know, sports, watching sports, more so than playing. But I, you know, I went to Tunnel. I'm pretty sure Tunnel was my real first like club experience. Mm. And
In New York?
Yeah, I went to Tunnel in New York. And I mean, like a lot of my friends at that time were going to Limelight and Club USA. But my first real kind of night was in Tunnel. And I went there and I got it right away. I'm like, okay, this is where like the misfits, like everybody who wants to fit in, they go here. They go there because everyone's on the same level, yeah. Right? And I said to myself, how do I work in this place? And so I figured out quite quickly that we can, you know, we had friends who've been running the clubs and they said, hey, you know, you can open a guest list and we'll pay you, I don't know, $3 a person. And the way it works is, you know, people have to send you the names. And so we had beepers and people had to beep us and we would go to like a payphone and we would put the cents in and then we would like call back and then we would get the names. And then I had to call my friend or beep my friend who was at their parents' house faxing the guest list to the club.
Mm,
faxing, wow. Like sending faxes over. And when people showed up, it wasn't a tally guest list. When people showed up, they had to show an ID and they had to be crossed off. So it couldn't be like Will C. It had to be Will Clark.
Yeah, yeah.
And it couldn't be like plus unlimited. They had to be exactly how many people show. I don't even remember if we were doing a lot of pluses. I think the idea was like we need everyone's names, maybe. I don't remember. But that was in like maybe 1996, 1997. And then what became a big changer for me is when we were in about 2000, we were in this club called Exit, which is in New York Terminal 5 now. And that venue has been around forever. This is where Mirage and Carbon were. I think Puff Daddy was the like head promoter of Carbon. It's got history, that building where Terminal 5 is. And the big change there was I was maybe 20 years old, and the partners of the party, they have created this system where, you know, the more your team produces, the more money you make. And I love money. So what I figured out is that instead of me being a promoter, because I wasn't the guy who would go and ask friends to use my guest list. I don't like doing that. So what I've decided to do was stand at the front and I would spot big groups. And so as they consistently would go to the club, I would remember them and then I would talk to somebody from the group and said, hey, here's the deal. The 12 of you are coming here now and you're all paying. Well, what if like 8 of you were paying?
Yeah.
The other 3 would get a free ticket and you, the main guy, I will pay you $10 per each of the person that you bring. And I want to do that because I want to train you how to become a promoter, because all these guy kids will go into colleges. So yeah. You know, we got them the business cards, the flyers, and they started working. And very, very quickly, like I would say in 6-7 months, we've built a monstrous team where, you know, our team would sell, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of tickets. And the next biggest team would sell like 11.
Yeah.
So that really helped me build a team and understand that I can mentor promoters and I can teach them how to promote. And they were the popular kids. Mm-hmm. Like they really had people who would trust their point of view. So if they went to the club, they went to the club with them. Mm. And from there, we've built a team. And once we build a team, I have kind of built the tiers of, you know, lieutenants, if you will. And yeah. then I've built more lieutenants. And the next thing you know, we had this huge team and we were able to do big venues on our own. But it was always street teams. Like mm. my thing was always driven by street teams until around 2004. I have, you know, New York nightlife kind of been down. September 11 happened and, you know, it wasn't that healthy. But in 2004, things started being well again. Clubs started opening up everywhere. And I realized that the edge I can gain would be digital. Mm. And so I went myself and kind of just started experimenting with everything that was available. And I have pretty quickly mastered things that other promoters didn't even know existed. Mm. And what that allowed me to do actually is completely change the model from relying on street promoters. So if tomorrow they leave, I'm fucked.
Yeah.
To relying on nobody, but actually learning how to capture the data, analyze the data, and how to storytell. This is a long time ago. Like this is before all the technology and this awesome ads that you see now in 3D. None of that existed. So it had to be music driven. And, you know, what I had partners, we had a nice team. And what we started focusing on, this was a club called Spirit, which was the original Sound Factory, believe it or not, then turned to Twilo. Mm-hmm. And then this Irish guy, Robbie Wooten, who owned Spirit in Dublin, came and opened it in New York. And, you know, we brought in some talent that back then wasn't really known in New York. I remember it was like we had Chosen Ceballos, we had Gabriel in Dresden, we had, you know, a bunch of New York was very local back then. You know, it wasn't so much of international talent. It was just the beginning of that era. And then from there we went and we would, you know, I like to stick in the same place for a while. Like if it's a mega club, we can build it. And then at some point, maybe in 2005-ish, Mike Bindra and Laura De Palma, Made Event was already the top promoter in New York in electronic music. And they were doing, they were the ones bringing all the great talent in house music. Circa Loca was already in New York from them. Like, and they started doing big production shows. So we would do like McCarran Pool, you know, by then Armin Van Buuren. They were doing Carl Cox exclusively, Paul and Dyke. And Mike told me like, hey, we want to do a festival. We're looking into doing more of a big production shows.
Yeah.
And for me, the guy who was doing, you know, three parties on a Thursday in different nightclubs in New York. And I was already married. We were starting to have kids. I figured that I want to stick to something that can scale, where we can do much bigger, much more special shows than running around the club.
Yeah.
And so that was the big move for me. And then it feels like yesterday, like the next 15 years just like zipped by.
Just flew by. And then that's how Electric Zoo started, correct?
Yeah, Mike and Laura had their eye on Randall's Island for a while. And the minute the island became available, they went right ahead with it. It was a two-day festival. I'm embarrassed. I don't remember if it was Friday, Saturday, or Saturday, or Sunday. I think it was Friday and Saturday the first year. Seth Roxler was the opening DJ on the main stage. Just put it in perspective.
Yeah,
that was the mindset. I mean, Mike and Laura had their ear on the ground, the music, that they were, you know, the seers of music. But that's where EDM kicked in. You know, the year after that was 2009, I want to say. And this is where, you know, David Guetta and Black Eyed Peas and like all of that just, you know, we've come to an era where the producers behind the music were the big names and the vocalists, you know, were next to them. And we just got into this place. It was the right place, right time. And we went 2 days, one more, and then we went 3 days. And then a few years later, we had sold something like 55,000 tickets a day for three different days. And we have taken over the field that we have now for Electric Zoo. And we've taken another football field that's perpendicular to it. And that was just insane. We had two main stages.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe how the music was evolving and how it was growing. It was insane.
It's kind of wild. How did you go from like scaling on the marketing side of things from small time club or clubs on a weekend to a festival? Because it's a big 55,000 to 1,000 is a big
scale. So this is where the time that I've invested in learning digital marketing. I have a friend, Gene. He also was a promoter, went to a digital business, turned it around, did really well. And when the clubs started going down, he welcomed me. And one of the things I was able to do with him is learn from him, but more so experiment. Mm. He would allow me to test different campaigns. When we started Electric Zoo, I got paid very little money. Like, people now complaining about getting paid. If I tell you how much money I was getting paid to work Electric Zoo, you would laugh. I mean, probably less than McDonald's workers at this point, right? It was very little money because Mike and Laura were all in. It was their personal investment. And for me, it was just, I really wanted to be a part of it. So I closed my eyes. I had other income coming in. So It wasn't the end of the world. But the deal we've made is we've agreed that if I'm going to do the marketing, we're going to not do the promotions that were at that time common promotions. Yeah. So a lot of flyers, a lot of posters, and whatever comes in between.
Yeah.
And we will focus on digital ads. So what I've done is I started utilizing YouTube. I mean, this is a long time ago. And YouTube was so cheap for electronic music that we've served something like a billion impression on YouTube the first year. And as a result, a lot of people came from other cities. I don't remember what the numbers were, but I would not be very surprised if our numbers were like 40% out of towners.
Wow.
40%. But this is before the Baltimores and the Philadelphias and the Bostons and all the other nearby cities, DCs, had anything of that size.
Yeah.
So it was special. And it was New York and Labor Day weekend, which is like the end of summer kind of unofficially, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then the second year, once that worked, the second year, we just went all in digital and we would create ads where we would explain to people that they're not that far. Like if you live in Philadelphia, you would see like how it's an hour and a half drive or whatever it was. And we were the first festival that I know of any music to figure out how to run the ads from the artist channels.
Okay.
I kid you not, I remember that they had to take my email address and manually add it to a Facebook page. So if Tiesto, I thought it was a great idea to build that bridge with the fans by having the artists promote the festival. Back then, there wasn't that many festivals. The artists didn't mind. The challenge was there were no pages yet.
Yeah.
It was only personal profiles. So they had to like add my email to their personal profile, and that would allow us to do this. I kid you not. We were the first that had done it. Then I found out that there is such thing called retargeting. Now, mind you, Facebook and Google did not offer it yet. It didn't exist. Think about it. You couldn't retarget. So there was a third party, like another vendor that we went to, and we started doing retargeting. And we were the first festival to retarget. And people would come up to me in clubs or even on the street that would know me and said, dude, like, I go, my wife is doing her breakfast and she's looking their recipes. Electric Zoo is there. I'm looking at the fitness site or the new site. Electric. We were everywhere. We took over the internet. And because we were the only ones who were doing it, there was no competition. It's not like we were showing and then all this other festival. We were the only ones and we were in people's eyes. And that's how we scaled. It was all digital. And back then, it was very unique.
Was it cheap then as well?
Super cheap. We were getting YouTube clicks. So on YouTube, you paid for CPC, not CPM. So we were getting clicks for like 8 cents.
Jeez.
Yeah. And we weren't getting charged for CPMs. That's why I think we did a billion impression. I got to look it up. I have the numbers.
So just for people to like kind of comprehend how cheap that is, how much would a click cost now?
10 times more, maybe more, maybe 20 times more.
Yeah. Expensive,
you know, so you literally got and then the impressions themselves were free, right? So I mean the traction you were, the story you could, if back then we had video assets like we have now, it would be insane. But so what we do, we would, any back then the innovations back then what to create an ad that has a moving component in it. Yeah. Yeah. So we had like my friend Jeff, who was our art director, creative director, he would do this flights, like a plane moving, and then like all this messaging, New York's electronic music festival, and people would fucking click, and we would get just massive amount of engagement on YouTube ads and Facebook ads. And then we would look at our backend. And I remember for press releases after the festival, we would go on and look at the countries and states. And dude, I swear to you, for the first 4 or 5 years, we always had every state. Yeah. We never had a year that there wasn't all 52 or whatever states, counting Puerto Rico and everything else, right? And we had massive amount of countries, massive, massive. And partially it's because a lot of people traveled to New York, and partially it was because a lot of international students from all over the country would come in. So when they would buy tickets, the zip codes or whatever countries were there. But yeah, it was a celebration. Everybody would come. And then they got to a place, I don't know what year it was, right? Maybe it was 14, where now every other city had Electric Zoo of their own. And SFX bought Electric Zoo as they were on a shopping spree. And they thought, SFX thought it was a good idea when the ticket sales weren't as good as hoped.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
To bring Mysteryland pink, magenta, little ugly stages to Electric Zoo and put them on the field. And it rained on Sunday for 3 minutes, 4 minutes, like at maybe 3 p.m., 2 p.m. it rained. And the city didn't allow us to return because they were concerned that there was going to be very strong winds. So they had to evacuate people. And the rule is, once you evacuate people out, you can never let them back in. And that was the city. And so we were forced to cancel the Sunday while people were still on the way, and it was a beautiful day. And this came a year after we canceled the Sunday because unfortunately some people, you know, died after taking fake supplements. And the brand was destroyed. And so from 2015, for the next 3-4 years, we spent time rebuilding the brand and gaining the trust of the city and the fans back.
So going back to that, I want to backtrack to that. How do you, over the years, a lot of brands go through kind of, in all walks of life, music, fashion, everything. A lot of brands have peaks and troughs, right? And you have, when you're at the bottom, usually something bad has happened. How do you overcome that? How do you rebuild relationships with fans, with the communities, et cetera, et cetera, as a festival person?
You admit to all the mistakes, right? So we have come out and we said, look, we know that you didn't like our magenta stages. And we know that you didn't like that we decided to put a main stage, a second main stage on a small field. We understand that it caused sound bleeding. We understand that we didn't deliver the product that you guys deserved. So what we're going to do is we're going to start out this year by significantly lowering our price, which we did. So we significantly lowered it. Maybe remove the fee altogether to start. And we said, look, we are going to bring you a brand new Electric Zoo. I started a process of creating themes for each of the festival. So it's like its own edition. And the first one was called Electric Zoo Transformed. So we promised them a story that we're going to transform And then we went and transformed it. And how we transformed it is by, we've invested a lot of money into creating this thematic stage designs for animals for Electric Zoo that were all also, enhance the storytelling, the theme of the festival. So we wanted to stay true to everything we do. And that's what we did. We went all in. It was a very challenging year. We've delivered the first big festival, animal stage. We've increased all kind of fun and activations on site. We've kept the tickets low. We have enhanced every challenge. Bathroom lines were long, fixed that. Security was having some challenge. We fixed every problem we've known. We've made a huge survey. I think it was like 4,000 people responded. So we like tried to go through that data as much as possible and outline everything that people told us need to be fixed. And we fixed it. And then, we didn't tell them, hey, we're going to fix it. Come, we're going to fix it. Come. We just stick to like, hey, we are transformed. We're going to transform it. And the biggest marketing moment for every festival, no matter what anyone says, is the festival. I always say that. Fuck pre-sales, all of that stuff. Okay, that's support to marketing. Marketing moment is the festival. When people come there and they love the product, they leave happy and tell their friends, come with me next year, or they leave unhappy and they'll tell their friends, we're never coming back and you're not coming back. The festival is your marketing, basically. Everything else just support and driving sales. And so that year, 2015, the fans, I think, realized that we were not bullshitting and, we lost money. We've invested everything in. And then every year thereafter, we've created a new story, a new theme. And the talent, we started gaining the trust of the artists back again. And we started being more innovative with talent again. And slowly but surely, it's rebuilt. But it took us 3 full years to really get back the trust, I think, of the fans in New York.
Which I think people don't realize how expensive that costs.
Yeah. This business we're in, it's crazy. It's the best and the worst all in the same time.
Why is it the best and the worst?
It's the best because, you get to build entertainment for people. There's no better joy for someone who's putting together a festival or a party to come in and like stay in the corner with a big smile and just watch everyone celebrating, right? Because these are people, they lost their family members, someone's sick, someone's broke. Everyone has drama all the time. And then you get them to the spot and they forget about the drama and they just smile. This is what energy is for me. Like I feel it because everyone is so positive and the smile is on. For me, it's like that's what drives me. But it's the worst because the fans are not very forgiving, to be fair.
Yeah.
You make one mistake, you get killed for it. If it rains for 10 minutes and the city feels it's unsafe, you can lose your shirt and all your money. It's risky. You don't spend a lot of time with your family. You're on the road a lot. You don't eat as great. There's a lot of challenges. It's not an easy business to be in. Financially it can be rewarding, but it can also destroy you. So
I think it can be rewarding, but on 90% of the occasions it's not rewarding financially with the amount of time that you put into it.
That's right. I try not to think about it. I just see the big picture and I say, it's hard to be happy. I've learned only recently that one person can make a decision to be happy and just be happy. Like nothing in your life can actually impact that if you really decide to just be grateful for being alive and just be happy. In today's world, people are unhappy because somebody scratched their car or, some crap that no one really should care about. That somehow makes people unhappy and emotional. For me, lately I've learned it, but before I didn't know how to deal with it. And this was happiness for me. Putting on shows and then being there to experience gave me that drive and happiness to balance with all the other emotional drama and everything else that was going on, all the challenges. That was my balance. I would go and I would be recharged. Now it's a little bit different. I think I've learned how to not rely on that.
Yeah.
But now I enjoy different things. Now I enjoy the fact that Will Clark is playing in New York to a completist of that Broken Mirage. And I know that at that moment, I have created value for everyone. And that's what drives me now. I know that Elro has welcomed Will, and that's a good connection. I know that there were a lot of new fans in the audience who didn't know Will, and now they've met him, and that's a great connection. And I know that Will's fans came and they got introduced to Elro, and that's great. And the venue is packed, and they're making money, and the agents and the management and the artists and all the people that have to be employed and got jobs.
Yeah.
And then I look at the fans. You see anybody upset? No, no one's upset. Seems like we are doing something that makes everyone happy. That's you know, that I'm willing to take risks in my life to do that, because it's very, that's the rewarding part for me now. And honestly, I have a lot of opportunities to do something safer that will let me spend more time with my family. But I'm looking actively for a project that would allow me to stay, but maybe not have to travel to so many things and do so many shows. And what I really want to do now is build a community. And I'm learning how to do it from scratch, because that was, I've never had, like, I want to launch my own, we want to launch a community that will connect people, especially starting with North American fans, where we can talk about house music.
Yeah.
Such a simple task. I feel like in that project, we are able to connect the artists, the musicians, and the fans together. And that will create this strong connection. And that's what's going to build a community. And then once we have that community and we can prove that we're trustworthy and we're doing it for everyone's good, I want to start experimenting and creating fun shows, fun events, virtual stuff, VR stuff, live stuff. You know, I really, really love working with Elro. I mean, that's
how did that start?
Because it's a,
how did that start?
We had a mutual friend who passed away. He group texted me and Juanito in Netherlands and said, "You guys need to meet." We said, "Fine," but we instead met 2 years later in Mexico, and I promised Juan I will come and see the show, but I didn't because I had a lot of tequila and I kind of missed it. But he's laid out a plan for me on what the North American vision was. And I'm like, no, not a good idea. Why don't we just do New York, Miami, focus on it and go to Vegas? And Juan said, "I'd love to go to Vegas, but it's too early. It's going to take a long time for us to get there, you know?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Yeah, but maybe we get lucky." And so that's what we did. We focused everything we had on New York and Miami. Juan has trusted me with everything. So it's really all to his credit, right? He's allowed me not to just spend the money without return, but also to do it the way I saw it. And me and him were really on the same page. And then we got invited to Vegas. And now Vegas suddenly is becoming a big house music city too. So it's good timing. But yeah, I'm really happy there. I'm so proud of Electric Zoo and how long we've done. And, you know, now I'm in this place where it's not about how much money I'm going to make. Rather, it's about of can I build something sustainable? And that's what my goal today is. Like something I build today that will be rewarding in 5 years. That's really what I want to do.
So tell us about this. What's the plan? What's the company? What's the name? What's all of this? Because I know you've started it already.
Well, the thing is, so what I've learned lately is no one has an idea and then just makes it work.
No,
it doesn't exist. What people do is they have an idea and then they pivot. They pivot all the time, all the time. And that's what I've been doing my whole life, by the way. Same thing. And that's why I like to do things and not have a plan. Like, where is it going? It'll go somewhere. So right now, today, the idea is that we are going to slowly grow this community called Gray Area. And the idea of today is to connect North American fans with the festivals and event brands and the artists that they don't know so much, you know, because they're just less known in North America. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, connect to fans in Europe and South America and Asia and other regions and connect them to American artists that are not as known there. And we feel like that's going to bring people closer And that's all we have. We don't have any plan. There's no monetization. And this is a passion project. There's no business plan. There's no investment. There's nothing. But the big idea for me was like, hey, you can do a Coachella size house music festival easy for as long as the fans who like artists like Chris Lake and Fisher, for example, and the fans who like artists like Adam Baer, and then for the fans who like artists like Eric Pritz and then Dixon. Yeah. Right now, there has been a lot of degrees of separation. You can come in, it's like almost different vibes. They wear different color shirts.
Yeah.
But it's getting closer and closer and closer. I said, look, if we build it together, especially if it's new fans that are just learning house music now, if we train them from start, it's all one music and put them together, then imagine how big of a scale we can have for those festivals. You know, Awakenings in the Netherlands, when I say it's 8 stages, it's all house music and techno. It's one of my favorite festivals, you know, honestly, every year. And I think we can put that in America, and we can probably, if we can't double the size because it's quite large, but we can do at least those numbers here.
Yeah, easy.
You know,
I think that's really important because I think there is a huge divide in genres of music.
For no reason.
Yeah, well, I think the reason is all superficial. It's we're cooler than you.
I don't think when I talk, so I'm going to embarrass myself a lot anyways in this interview. Honestly, it's about, I think, status. It's like somebody want to show off their watch, so they go buy gold, yellow, ugly gold watch because they think that puts them into... I literally think that's what it is. I think that people that have experienced proper Ibiza and dancing in DC-10 and they feel like, well, we've done this for 10 years, we are the experts and the pros, while you guys, you're just getting started. You don't even know who Dixon is or a history of Circo Loco. Instead of saying, hey, you know, your music is cool, but you should check out what we do. You're going to love it. Let's like do it all together. So I think that's what it is. But I think it's really going to, the younger generation is not like that. I think the younger generation is a lot more welcoming and opening, and I think they're going to fix that issue.
I think what I've always found in America is that the crowds in America that go to parties are a lot more open-minded compared to more so in UK and Europe. I'm not too sure why that is, but I know that there's people that come and see me play and they go and see Seth Troxler play and then they go and see Tiesto play. And there's not as much like snobbery as there is in the UK and Europe. It's still here. But I think it's really important that this happens.
And you know, Electric Zoo was a good platform to watch this, where people would come in being Armin Van Buuren fans and they would stay there on the main stage and they would see Eric Pritz and then they would kind of go to Carl Cox and then from Carl Cox they would kind of go down that rabbit hole to the house music. And for that reason, those people, they'll always love Armin Van Buuren. They'll always love Above and Beyond or Eric Pritz or those guys. So they will go to the festival and they'll do everyone. But the fans that used to go to Marco Corolla in New York, where all Marco could do was sell 200 tickets in some basement, they always felt that they are too cool for that.
Yeah.
So they weren't going to go to like a Dirty Bird party.
Yeah.
And the whatever reasons in their head they had for that, that was delusional. They made it up. Like there was no real reason, right? Dirty Bird parties were amazing. But that was kind of that degree of separation that I think is now is getting lesser and lesser. And gray area, there's a reason why we wanted to call gray area is it's like no boundaries, you know, like we don't care what it's called. The bass house, deep house, nobody fucking knows what the music is called anymore.
Yeah.
You know, people ask me like, how do you qualify this? I don't know what it's called anymore. Bassy house, bassy tech house, techie bass house. Like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think this is really important. And it's nice that somebody's... It's not an issue per se, but I think what is happening is people are missing out on really good experiences. And I think by creating something that allows people to experience more, we all become richer in knowledge and experience, which makes us all better people.
Yeah, and it'll elevate, you know, house music to the scale it's never seen. And then sky's the limit, honestly.
Mm, because
right now my kids are playing Fortnite and they're seeing like Travis Scott concerts in Fortnite. I say in 2 years, it's going to be house music there.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting because in the UK, it would be house music on Fortnite. Whereas over here, you have this, it's not even a competition. Hip hop just takes over. It's just, what do you see in North America house music ever being able to take over hip hop?
Who knows?
Or live beside, because they don't even live beside at this moment in time.
Yeah, listen, what's happened now is that people that were listening, people that would go to VIP clubs, let's call them, to buy bottles and tables and listen to hip hop, are now sitting at Nick Fanciulli's parties going like this. Yeah. You know, they're like, it's trends.
Yeah.
As long as it's becoming trendy, people switch. You know,
yes,
it's all music, right? You can love hip hop and house together. You know, it's I think it's always going to be the trendsetters that will kind of, you know, if the VIP clubs are starting to play house music, suddenly people that used to listen to hip hop will listen to house music.
Totally. How important would you say for artists, big, like up and coming, big, large, of all sizes, to kind of grow marketing?
So, you know, I've seen a lot of artists disappear, and then I've seen a lot of people, artists, you know, grow the fan bases over the years. I've come to my point of view is that the only thing that should matter for artists are the actual fans, not the streams on Spotify, nothing should matter except for actual fans, because real fans will never leave you. Like in context, the way I see and look about it is, you know, if Depeche Mode, the U2 had the fans, you know, a 17-year-old fan, now that fan is 40, they're no less of a fan of those bands. The same goes for our music. You know, when people love you, they will never bail on you. They'll always be a true fan. If it's a one-hit wonder, track that has 1 billion plays on Spotify, that means absolutely nothing. Now, to be fair, in our world, you get that billion play song, you might be rich and you might get a lot of touring and things, but I don't know how sustainable that is, because somebody else will make a different track. So I think for the artist, the most important thing on marketing side is to build a stronger relationship with the fans that are their true followers, because those are the fans that tell, every time you release new music, your best fans are the ones that listen to it and then share it with their friends. And for as long as you have those fans, you will always grow. It's just, you know, like, think about it. The song came out, they texted. The song came out, he texted. But if you don't have that base, and all that you had was hype over a big track, then those same people, they listen to other tracks, and I don't think it's sustainable. I don't know if that answers your questions.
I guess, no, it does. I guess realistically, it's about building a core fan base and growing that. So what would you say the best way for a new artist to build a core fan base on the marketing side of things, rather taking the music out of it? It's like, okay, this is a brand new artist. How would you work it?
In today's world, I would capture content and then figure out how to distribute this content to the right people. Because what I've noticed over the past few years, once it's become popular to capture little video clips and put it on Instagram, is that I was able to instantly identify future stars. It's insane.
Yeah.
So I kid you not, like when I saw Michael Beebe's thing at Sub Polo, you know, at some point, I don't know how many years ago was it, and I saw that energy and I saw how he was, I'm like, okay, this guy is going to be a star. Mm. So I think if you capture the content from the shows, when you play, it does capture some of this energy, believe it or not. And if you can distribute it to the right people, which in today's world is kind of easy. Yeah, you post it, and unfortunately, Facebook holds you hostages, and until you pay it, it's not going to really show it, but you pay them. You pay it, and then what you are doing is you allowing for the fans that are already fans of artists like you to see your craft. And I think that's how you capture their attention. And then from that point on, it's just about staying connected with those fans. And what I had a lot of disagreements with this off season, so to speak, with my artist friends is the value of live streams. I completely disagree that live streams are not special if you do them too often. I don't think that anybody should care how many people are on the other side. Rather, they should say that whoever is listening, I'm making their day better. They're dancing, or they're grooving, or even they're working and listening. And you just keep going. And after the pandemic was over, clearly what I was saying made some sense, because there are some artists that were, I don't want to call them small, but you know, they weren't able to sell thousands of tickets, that are now selling out stadiums.
Yeah.
And I really contribute that to a year of live streams, because it built real communities. It connected people together in difficult times. And the fact that now that we are back in normal world and the live streams are not important, is, to me, it's crazy. I think they're even more important. And I think that there's going to be an integration of gaming, VR, AR, NFTs, live events, live entertainment will change. I don't know exactly how it will change, but it will change the way we know it. You know, people will come with NFTs, not tickets, and NFT is going to be an access to a backstage. And after the festival, they're going to get, you know, some kind of after movie pinned to their digital wallet, you know, and there'll be VR situation where people at home who can't travel to the show will be able to hear the sets and see it.
Yeah.
I think staying engaged with the audience is the way for the artist to grow consistently.
Perfect. Do it, people. Dude, I've got to wrap this up. And I feel like I could speak to you for fucking hours about everything.
I'm a dangerous interview because I don't think. And so whatever I said, hopefully I didn't offend too many people.
No, it was perfect. I absolutely loved it. How can people go get involved with your community, et cetera, et cetera?
It's Enter Gray Area on Instagram. The domain is grayarea.co. So grayarea.co. And, you know, if you want to see me cook food, medium quality cooking, the one and only on Instagram, I welcome everyone to tune into my life and feel bad for my struggles.
Legend, man. Thank you so much for being on. Catch you very
soon. Thanks for having me, brother.
My big pleasure. Love, dude. Big love. And that is a wrap. I hope you enjoyed it. Share it. Subscribe. Send it to everyone. Keep safe. See you next time.
Every day, we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you are ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.